There are countless voices in the void. Some belong to ships adrift, their crews long dead, their automated distress beacons pulsing out into the inky darkness of the galaxy, calling for aid, which will never come. Others are tricks of the Empyrean, echoes of ancient words that have bled from the immaterium, warped by the tides of unreality, until they are no longer messages, but the stains of the warp, ever imprinted upon reality. Some, however, some are traps. The Saint and Vigilant was a workhorse of the Imperial Navy, a Viper-class scouting sloop which had patrolled the edge of the Segmentum Pacificus for almost four decades without returning for a refit. With a narrow hull and extended sensor vanes, she looked less like a warship and more like a watchman's lamp adrift in the dark, built to serve as the eyes and ears of the Navy, even at the edge of the Emperor's light. Her crew of 4,000, far below the sloop's designed complement, was a lean, pared-down force who were forced to make do with the limited resources at their disposal, keeping her running through constant labor and the stubborn pride of voidsmen who had learned to survive with far less. They knew every creak of her hull, every flicker in her lumen arrays, every momentary hesitation in the thrum of her stalwart plasma drives. She was a ship of habit and routine, but this routine meant survival, for one can never be too sure as to what truly lurks out in the darkness of the void. For the past 2 years, she had been stationed at the fringes of the Veilan Nebula, a patch of the starless abyss, far too empty to merit any significant attention from the lords of the Administratum. There were no thriving worlds here, no fortified bastions, nor great warp routes. It was only a scattering of mining outposts, clinging to the edges of dead rocks, and the cold wreckage of ships that had never reached their destinations. The Invigilance Patrol, however, was a necessary one, acting as the first responders to any lonely calls for aid, deploying the brave men and women of the Navy to bring the Emperor's light to these reaches where it was all but forgotten. But it was then, as their vessel crested the fading remnants of the nebula, that the signal was received. At first, it was nothing more than a scratching across the vox, a burst of static that could have easily been explained as electromagnetic interference from the nebula's dust belts. Then the words began to emerge. They were faint, fractured, and torn apart by gaps of silence.
Please! Help! We are not alone! He is in the dark.
The message repeated again and again. No two transmissions were the same, with words shifting, syllables slurring, as though the vox itself did not wish to be truly heard. No point of origin could be fixed, nor any direction identified, as the message seemed to come from everywhere, and from nowhere.
Command, this is Cutter 3. Are you hearing this too? I can't make out where this damn thing is coming from.
The sloop's astropaths urged for caution. Signals in the void were rarely what they appeared to be. The Immaterium had a habit of dangling bait into the abyssal gloom, shrouding their hooks behind something too tempting to ignore. But the captain of the Saint Invigilant was born a man of the Imperial Navy, bound by the unyielding code of his service, and sworn to protect the meek souls of the Imperium through even the darkest of nights. If there was even the slightest chance the signal was genuine, to ignore it would be to abandon his duty, and perhaps damn the souls of any survivors, knowing that help had been close enough to hear their cries. And so, the course was set. The astropathic choir strained, linking their song as one, to narrow down the source of this signal, not quite identifying the caller, but sensing the point in space where the signal burned its brightest. Sliding into the fading nebula, the distant motes of starlight were swallowed up by clouds of cosmic dust. Great shadows loomed in the dark, jagged shards of rock tumbling in slow silence while the skeletons of broken ships drifted between them like the bones of some stellar leviathan. Hours passed. The signal grew no stronger and no weaker. The helmsman, perplexed, reported that the Saint Invigilant had been circling its target without closing the distance, as though space itself had been caught in a loop. But then, without warning, the augurs screamed, "Contact!" It came into view from the blackness like the broadside of a fortress, a wall of twisted metal over 15 kilometers high, vanishing into shadows above and below. The flank of this thing stretched away until it too was lost in the dark, the sloop a mere mote beside its unfathomable vastness. As the scouting craft edged around its face, the truth promptly became clear. This was no asteroid, nor a single wreck. This was a space hulk, a twisted conglomeration of derelict vessels fused into a single impossible mass, a drifting armada crushed together, often thought to contain little more than bones and ghosts. Engines had contorted into spires, jutting forth from the hull like the teeth of some rusted giant. Armor plates, some of which were clearly not human-made, from a bygone age, had fused with ancient imperial hulls. The whole structure turned slowly in the dark, and for a moment, the Saint Invigilant seemed no more than an insect crawling beside the carcass of a god.
All stations, this is Command. Final approach complete. Target designation, mass 77. Relative bearing 083 by 049. Range 900 meters.
Mass 77 confirmed.
Dock and bay appears secure, but watch yourselves, men. I don't want anyone getting lost in there.
Roger. Come on, Team One. Everything by the book. No heroes.
Copy that. Team Two, when we board, keep your safeties hot. Something doesn't feel right about this.
Yeah, but nothing's ever right with a boarding mission. Team 3, stay on my 6 locked and loaded. We're all coming home from this.
From somewhere within the hulk, the signal pulsed again. Closer now, louder, clearer. The final phrase remained unchanged. He is in the dark. The hulk hung before them as though it were a mountain of broken steel, torn from the darkest nightmares of a Mechanicus Tech priest. From a distance, it had no single silhouette, only a patchwork of conflicting profiles, violating every principle of proper shipbuilding protocols. The myriad materials which had floated for eons now drank in the darkness of the void, absorbing the lights of the distant stars, giving nothing back. A slow corona of debris made up of rivets, flecked armor, and other miscellaneous scrap drifted around it, only visible by the blazing beacons of the Saint Invigilant.
So this is mass 77? Doesn't look like any mass I've ever seen.
Come on now, Sarge. It looks more like a mall.
Right then, the Maw. It is.
The Imperial vessel crept forward at a crawl, its thrusters feathered and void shields drawn thin. On the bridge, litanies were murmured under fearful breath. The captain stood at the rail with his hands clasped behind his back, a steady gaze now fixed upon this thing that filled the viewport. He was sure that somewhere inside, that he would find the source of the mysterious distress call.
Boarding detail, stand to. Ritual of pressurization on my mark. Armsman squads 1-3 to airlock Primus. Seal clamps in 3, 2, mark.
They had found an open wound just large enough to dock the sloop. It was a yawning bay whose blast doors had presumably been battered by stellar impacts, cleaving the hull open like ragged petals of steel. The umbilical reached across the void and sealed with a sigh. A group of engine seers went first, their sensors swinging, machine prayers ticking in holy binaric. Behind them came 60 armsmen in suits of sealed carapace, their visors polarized, shotguns loaded and held close. Inside, the air was cold, thin, and marred by the drifting grit of ruin. Helm lamps caught walls bent and battered beneath the unfathomable weight of the hulk. Grav sensors shifted from 30% in some areas to being completely absent in others, sometimes spiking to full without warning. The architecture was blasphemous. Gantries had collapsed inwards, whilst service tunnels twisted down, meeting with bulkheads that once stood as the external hull. Here, a saint's face in the wall niche had been hammered into a featureless oval. There, a corridor that buckled back in on itself, yet emerged in a seemingly new location.
Bay secure. No thermal contacts. Auspex's returns are cluttered.
Say again, too.
Cluttered, sir. It keeps painting us twice.
They advanced by traditional naval protocol, teams splitting towards high ground, service arteries and half-sealed blast doors fused to the deck by ancient slag. Tech priests coaxed them open with quiet invocations, revealing passageways that shifted in scale between scans. One was measured at 43 meters on approach, 51 on return. The distress call persisted, wandering from chamber to chamber, sometimes resonating through the deck, sometimes whispering from above in unseen rafters.
Watch yourself out there. I'm recording unusual movement, somewhere on a level above us. I think it's on 9.
There were signs of a catastrophe, but few bodies. A glove fused to a rail by melted plastic. A helmet with no skull inside. A rosary half embedded in foam. In a ruined gunnery station, a devotional banner hung intact, nailed to the ceiling by bayonets, which had long rusted. In some rooms, the air was breathable, yet notably tainted by the stink of leaking oil and chemical gases. Frost gathered on their armor, sublimating to vapor from the faint heat of their lamps. Dust drifted like plankton through the deep, hanging stagnant, yet disturbed by their presence. They marked their route with chalk glyphs at junctions. But on their returns, the marks seemed unnervingly changed, sometimes being neater than before, or simply to be found meters away from the original point. No one dared to admit that something was wrong.
Team Leader 2 reporting. Command, it's quiet. Just seeing a lot of rust. There's nothing here, but something still doesn't feel right.
Keep your channel clear, too. No muck-ups.
Beyond their perimeter, the spaces grew hungrier. One long corridor seemed to run beside the same wall, no matter how they approached it, like a reflection that refused to admit to the presence of a mirror. The Auspex painted it as a neat and straight line, but the human eye insisted it bowed inwards. Gravity migrated oddly. A dropped bolt floated, slowed, reversed, and settled back to the deck with an almost deliberate pause. In one moment of weightlessness, several Vox fragments arrived at once, blurred and overlapping.
Please help! Not alone! Here's...
The boarding party found a narrow stairwell that seemed to descend, even though the deck plan clearly showed that it led upwards. Here, the sound changed. Gone was the deep, metallic groaning of the Hulk's mass, and in its place came a thin, insectile burr, constant and impossible to pinpoint. Helm cams recorded no movement, yet their ears could not ignore it.
Signal strength increasing 2.4 decibels per deck. Harmonics unstable. Final phrase persists. He is in the dark.
Moving deeper, the Hulk's inner arteries only continued to grow stranger. Walkways opened into vast halls, their scale defying the prior Auspex maps. Some chambers were inverted, with vaunted ceilings jutting upwards and their floors above. Yet the armsmen walked without notice, only realizing the anomaly after reviewing their confounding path. In some places, the walls seemed to have drifted further apart than they had been on approach, whilst in others they pressed subtly closer, with the deck narrowing underfoot, yet without a single seam out of place. The voices began soon after. At first, they were faint, perhaps too faint to notice over the sound of one's own breathing. It started with a muffled step, echoing back from the rear, followed by a metallic rattle, as though a loose plate had been nudged. Then came speech, notably distorted and hard to place.
Hold. Did you hear that too? What the hell's is on this ship? Command, we've got possible movement on level 9. No visual contact.
Tech adepts tracked the source of the noises through the Auspex. Their readings returned conflicting vectors. One moment the movement was ahead by 70 meters, the next behind by 10. More than once, an Auspex flagged multiple echoes of the same heat signature, each moving in different directions.
Come on, we can't keep a trace on this thing. It keeps moving away, but there's definitely something on this ship.
The phenomenon worsened. Short exchanges on the squad channels began to repeat seconds after they were spoken, played back in the same voices, but subtly wrong, with syllables flattened, pauses misplaced, the intonation just unfamiliar enough to prickle the nerves. In the void, it is natural for one to experience fear, and some crew will even go wibble, meaning that the mental load of stellar isolation has become too much, pushing them into a state of mental exhaustion and madness. But this fear was only heightened when the team found what appeared to be a sign that something knew of their presence. In a pressure-locked vestibule, three rifles had been mag-clamped upright to the wall, their safeties switched on, their straps neatly coiled. All three were Navy pattern, their serial numbers scratched out and replaced with the names of three men who were yet to report back from their probing investigation. But the captain's order was simple: continue. The Navy did not abandon a mission just because of unease. They entered a chamber large enough to be a launch bay, though its ceiling was lost in darkness. In the center, something stood on the deck, a silhouette, man-sized and frozen in place. The lamps of Squad 2 swept toward it and revealed nothing but a suit of void armor, scorched and dented, propped upright on its own. Its visor was mirrored black, reflecting the beams back at their wielders.
Command, this is Team 2. Visual on a suit. Dog tags belonging to Junior Armsman Liviana. Emperor, preserve her.
Negative, Team Leader. Double-check your visors. Liviana is still aboard the Invigilant. Over.
The armor vanished from the bay before anyone could secure it. The recording showed nothing. One frame it was there, the next it was gone. As if the space between frames had been longer than anyone realized. Back aboard the Saint Invigilant, systems were failing without reason. Primary Vox relays stuttered, playing overlapping fragments of orders never given. Engine room crews reported knocks along the hull, regular, patient, and far too measured to be random impacts of debris. One officer claimed to have heard his own voice over the intercom, issuing instructions he had not yet spoken. In the hulk, Squad 3 advanced into a narrow junction where the lumen strip still flickered with a dying current. The walls here bore impact craters from Laz and bolt fire, yet there were no signs of any bodies. A spent shell casing drifted lazily across a zero-G pocket, moving as though in water. The junction's far wall bore a single clean handprint, gloved and human, pressed into the frost. A matching print was found two decks away, still damp, as though made seconds before.
Feels like someone's walking just ahead of us. We round our corner, they round theirs.
Copy that, Three. Maintain formation and keep your channel clear.
It was here that the first locator beacon went silent. The bearer, an armsman named Corrick, had been in visual range 30 seconds before. Helmet cams caught a flicker of movement as he turned a corner, then static. The beacon signal split into two returns, one far ahead, one far behind, before both dissolved into the white noise of the void. The search yielded nothing. His tether line ended in a clean, unfrayed coupling. No signs of stress, no trace of a struggle.
Corrick is in the dark.
Command, we think Corrick's gone wibble. We can hear him, but we've got no eyes on his location. We're pulling back to find him. We ain't leaving here with losses.
The captain allowed a partial withdrawal to regroup, but the routes had changed. Corridors no longer led back towards the docking bay. Several paths had twisted in on themselves to form a spiraling descent. A bulkhead that had been a shrine door an hour earlier now opened into a munitions corridor that none of them recognized. Squad 1, carefully venturing through a sealed compartment, emerged into what appeared to be a mirrored image of the Saint Invigilant's own crew compartment, though notably abandoned and entirely devoid of light. Their voxcasters promptly went silent, never to be heard again. Morale was slipping. Breathing over the comms from the active teams became faster and shallower. The whispered litanies of the attached tech priests grew louder, less formal, as though they had forgotten they were transmitting to the entire crew. Squad leaders kept the men moving, the lamp beams steady, but their own helmet cams lingered too long on empty doorways and on shadows that seemed to ripple just before the light touched them. And always, the distress signal, still fractured, still shifting, but far clearer now and far closer. It slipped into closed channels uninvited, cycling between voices, sometimes in tones that belonged to the listening crews themselves.
Please help. Not alone. He is in the dark.
By this point, the captain of the Saint Invigilant had reason enough to order for a full evacuation. But the Navy does not retreat lightly from an unresolved conflict, and the boarding teams still had men unaccounted for. So they pressed deeper, unwilling to admit the truth that the hulk seemed unwilling to let them leave. And somewhere far ahead, where the decks grew narrow and the air tasted of metal left too long in the rain, something waited. The hulk stopped pretending to be empty. It had tolerated their intrusion, suffered their presence like a splinter. But now, it was time to heal and to regrow around them. Squad 2 reached a transit gallery paved with hex plates that rang faintly underfoot, meeting with a viewing arch of thick yet cracked glass. Beyond it was the abyss, the nebula's slow rivers of dust and hanging stalwart, the Saint Invigilant herself clamped to the hulk's flank, lights growing dim as though seen through dark waters. The timestamps on their recording revealed only the last 3 seconds. Then the arch showed darkness and the suggestion of a wall a handspan away. But no one had moved. The squad pivoted as one to the far end of the gallery. At the limit of their lamp beams, a figure stood in the door, humanoid, yet motionless, with proportions that seemed a degree too tall to be comfortable. Their scans attempted to resolve it, but the more the machines tried to define the silhouette, the less certain it became, as though the act of seeing were an argument it enjoyed prolonging.
Command, visual on a human-sized contact. No heat signature. Range, 35.
Copy that, Team 2. Challenge and advance.
Squad 2 advanced by the book, but the figure did not move. At 20 meters, it elongated slightly, as though the perspective had changed despite closing the distance. At 15, it turned, joints unmoving, yet it had undeniably shifted in its position. The shape remained frontal, while its location slid sideways, deeper into the dark. At 10 meters, the lamps flared and the doorway was empty. They cleared the junction, but found nothing. Helm cams rewound. Frame by frame, the figure occupied every frame until the one in which it did not. And then there was naught but the silence and the darkness. Elsewhere, Squad 3 reached a machine vault ringed by silent servitors bolted to their cradles. Their skulls were polished to devotional sheen, their faces were blank plates inscribed with short prayers for silence. One by one, the servitors' lips cracked along old seams that should have been metal. The prayer plates creased, breath steamed from vents that had never been connected to lungs.
Command, we've got motion in the hard mutes. No signals, no power. They're fogging.
Do not approach, armsmen. Log and move on.
In the Saint Invigilance engine decks, the slow knocking along the hull had never ceased. It was always the same. Seven strokes, then a pause, then seven again. A bosun stood with his palm on the plating, translating rhythm into words no one could bear to hear. In the Vox pit, an astropath began to hear his memories as orders, briefs he had delivered on prior expeditions, replies to questions he never dared to ask. He wrote them down into the log in the hopes that when the time came, that they would be true. The captain's demeanor did not change so long as he was occupied. He moved icons on the hololith with a finger that trembled only when he thought of nothing at all. Moments before, the nav plot had flickered to show the Saint Invigilant not alongside the Hulk, but deep within its interior, somehow connected at all points, as though it had always been a part of the Maw. Back on the Hulk, the teams converged on a long transfer corridor that should have led, by their best maps, toward the original bay complex. It ran straight as a gun barrel. The lamps lit 30 meters, and at the edge of that light, the corridor narrowed, and at the edge of that narrowing, the figure waited again, taller now by the height of a helmet.
Command. Visual restored on the humanoid. It's in our sights. Permission to open fire, sir.
Team 2, I repeat your previous orders. Challenge and identify.
Challenge and identify.
By the Emperor. Command, I know that voice.
Armsman Marius fired a single, unsanctioned shot low and center. The recoil pushed him back in the thin gravity. The slug chewed through plating and ricocheted into the dark with the whine of a furious insect. The figure did not react. The ricochet returned fast, as if the corridor were far shorter than initially thought, and peened off beside the shooter's ear. The Auspex reported the corridor's temperature rising in a shallow gradient toward the contact. Helmet glass filmed as if breathed upon by an enormous mouth, but each breath wiped itself away from the wrong side. Korik's beacon pinged once from the contact's position, then from behind them, then from the Invigilant's docking bay. The returns overlapped, three skins of the same signal laid one atop another and pressed until the numbers bled.
Korik. Korik. Korik is in the dark.
They advanced because there was no doctrine for standing still in the face of such horror. But the corridor did what corridors seem to do when they are not in the mood to be corridors, and it changed its mind. The right-hand wall decided it had always been an open arch. The floor decided it was a ramp, and the squad's formation became a stagger. The figure receded with the same distance markers, forever 10 meters beyond the lamp's reach, forever a head taller than the last time, forever waiting with the patience of a figure not bound to the laws of time. They did not notice they were turning until they emerged in a chamber they had catalogued an hour earlier from a different direction. Their chalk mark was on the bulkhead, neater than they had drawn it. In the center stood the remains of Team One. They had been mashed together, their armor fused at the seams, exposed flesh melded, gear jutting out as new limbs, and dog tags hanging vertically into the air as though they were the inverted baubles on a festive tree. This grotesque horror, however, was indeed devoid of life. It did not move, and it did not react to their presence.
We have positive confirmation on the anomaly. do not touch. Just photograph and pull back to the Invigilant.
They moved. One helmet turned slightly as they passed, following the light. The recording showed no actuator movement and heard no sound. Squad 3, advancing along a parallel duct, reported a pressure change, ears popping, suit seals flexing, as if descending a mountain inside the ship. The duct ended in a small door half blocked by cabling. Beyond it lay a maintenance crawl space. They wriggled through. But then, they were met with a sight that filled them with relief. It was the docking bay, still affixed with the umbilical of the Saint Invigilante. In the distance, they saw the ship-bound armsmen guarding the entrance, and the familiar sight of their craft washed over them like the sweetest breath of fresh air. The scuffed paint, the old devotional plaques, the hairline cracks along the hull, they were all imperfections. But to the armsmen, this was home.
Command, we have visual on home corridor D-17, requesting confirmation and permission to board.
Silence. Then a reply through teeth.
Confirmed. Proceed.
They approached the gallery. The guarding crew did not move. Yet, this didn't matter. The team simply assumed they were too wary to advance into this hellish craft. But all of a sudden, with a sinking realization, they noted that as they walked down the corridor, that it seemed to grow longer, and that they were never closing the distance between themselves and with the craft. Sensing that something was wrong, the team fell back, now understanding that this was yet another mirage. And as they retreated through the crawl space, they emerged into a room that they had never seen, where the air hung heavy with the distinctive metallic twang of old blood. The captain repeatedly voxed for their withdrawal. It was the correct order, but it was never received. From his command terminal, he still saw the empty bulkhead, ever the same, cloaked in darkness, punctuated by the dim lights of his sloop. In the engine decks of the Saint Invigilant, the knocking stopped. Something outside the hull pressed close, and the plates sighed. The ship began to transmit on all bands, a clean distress call composed of the last hour's recorded fragments arranged into the same message that had brought them here in the first place.
Please help! We are not alone. He is in the dark.
The command crew aboard the Saint Invigilant continued to analyze the warped maps of the hulk, transmitting clear escape routes to teams 2 and 3, which were finally audible through the static. But they were never intact, and they always seemed just scrambled enough to provide false direction, leading them deeper into the very heart of the abominable vessel. Squad leaders anchored tethers at junctions before pressing on. The daisy chains should have guaranteed identifiable egress, with the teams moving in unison, every man with one hand on the cord and one on their weapon. But twice a squad reached a knot in the cord that none had tied. Then separate lines met and passed through one another. But worst of all was when the vanguard of Team 2 met with their own rear guard, clearly having been separated at some point, yet none could understand this, as they had never lost eyes on the armsmen ahead of them. Still, they moved. They moved because movement felt like a choice, and that perhaps if they kept moving, that they would stand defiant against the maddening interior of the rusted labyrinth. The hulk indulged them with corridors that recognized their lamps and with stairs that were, in fact, nothing more than a simple set of stairs. Down one flight, gravity migrated to the right and stayed there. The men learned to lean as sailors learn to lean into a rogue wave.
All teams, this is Command. Converge immediately to Bay Primus. No detours, no salvage, no dawdling. We are preparing for departure in 6 hours. Sound off by count at each junction.
Copy. Team 2 en route.
That damn time, Command. Team 3 on the move.
It took them 5 hours. 5 agonizing hours of trudging through the slanted darkness to finally reach the true antechamber, where the docking umbilical remained attached. The Saint Invigilant was there. She hung patient against the torn bulkhead, her running lamp still illuminating the stagnant air. The gallery above showed silhouettes at their posts, armsmen possessing an indefatigable discipline, visors black, staring into the cold. But their shadows seemed just a fraction too long.
Command, this is Team 2. I have 3 with me. Gallery watch requesting handshake and immediate reboarding.
Forget the bloody handshake. Watchmen, get this damn door open on the double. We ain't staying out here for a picnic.
For a moment, there was silence.
Teams 2 and 3. Handshake granted. Proceed and embark. Welcome home.
With a cacophonous groan, the bulkhead of the umbilical slowly opened, and there it was, the old interior of the Saint Invigilant. And within, the men and women of the Imperial Navy, ready to pull back and to bring them out of this hell once and for all. But in unison, as they passed through, they heard a distinct knocking, delicate as finger bones on glass, tapping against the outside of the passageway. The armsmen, concealing their own fear, marched on, never faltering nor stumbling, as this was finally the end of their nightmare. If there was time, they might have logged it, but Command's orders were clear. They were leaving, and perhaps the less they knew about this hulk, the better. But then, they were through the bulkhead and back aboard their glorious home. Some of the men had hated the Saint Invigilant. It was an old ship after all, but now it felt as comforting and as inviting as the finest of palaces ever to be found throughout the entire Imperium.
Bay Primus secure. Cyclone Alta. Step by pairs. Keep the line.
With another grinding moan, the bulkhead slowly closed, sealing away the hells of the space hulk and confining them to joyous safety. But one man looked back, he couldn't help it, and noted that the distal end of the umbilical seemed darker than it should have been, with the air tinged by the color of old oil.
Umbilical retracting. All stations, prepare for immediate departure.
But the umbilical would not retract. It too moaned as the gears and pistons attempted to pull itself back. But within the loading bay, unbeknownst to even the tech priests, it had become fused with the very decking of the hulk. On the sloop, the master of Vox flinched as his receivers lit up with inbound calls. Logs poured in, stamped with times from futures long past, whilst sealed channels opened up, spilling out desperate orders for evacuation, yet also begging for the vessel to remain docked and to never leave. In the engine bay, the knocking pattern had developed into a constant pressure, while the hull itself seemed to breathe. Men stood with hands on iron, and it felt like warm skin. The captain gripped the rail and let slip a small prayer. He watched the hololith as icons representing the armsmen moved into the vessel, then faltered, duplicated, and vanished. He moved a finger to adjust the chart and found it hovering over the umbilical, no longer reading a distinction between the Saint Invigilant and the Hulk. Across the vessel, naval crewmates whispered their own prayers to the Emperor, pleading for safe passage away from this blasted realm. Fragments were caught by open vox casters, coalescing in a new call, reverberating throughout the ship as a prayer for the fates of ships destined to lose their name. But then they went quiet, replaced only by a rising static, prompting an ever-rising panic amongst the doomed voidsmen. Their old prayers then came through, but again they were scattered, and only fragments could be received.
Please help. Keep going. Stay secure. Not alone. He is in the dark.
Back on the bridge, the master of Vox collapsed upon the deck as a gibbering wretch, sobbing incoherently as he heard the old ship speak through the Vox. The Saint Invigilant, proud sloop of the Imperial Navy, began to transmit on all bands. The message was assembled from the last hour's fragments, cleaned of fear where fear muddied the words, arranged with the fussy care of a scholar preparing his next sermon. It propagated through the hull and then out into the eternal darkness of the void.
Please help! We are not alone. He is in the dark.
And then the lights of the Saint Invigilant flickered out, and the crew aboard went silent. The engines went cold, the knocking stopped, and somewhere far inside the hulk, a long corridor accepted that it had always been a corridor and lay down. When a relief expedition came years later, they found the hulk, but did not find the Saint Invigilant. They had heard the plea for aid and the broken warning of something in the dark. But there was nary a trace of the Imperial vessel, only the crude amalgam of racked steel drifting through the dense clouds of the lone nebula. The rescue effort, locating a relatively open docking bay, deployed their own umbilical to investigate the wreck, and in time, the Hulk would gain another ship and transmit another call. There are countless voices in the void. Some are dead. Some are from the warp, learning to speak like us. And some are from ships which have been taught their lines and repeated them faithfully, because duty is a habit, and sometimes only a habit may endure the night. The signal still travels. It still ends where it began. And it still carries with it the mysterious warning.
He is in the dark.